Welcome to the Gary DeMar Blogcast, brought to you by Canon Press. Check us out at canonpress.com.
Welcome to the Gary DeMar Blogcast. Topic of today's entry is, you're a white supremacist if you don't believe in evolution. The political left is all about redefinition. For example, critical race theory, CRT, is said to be and is an academic theory mostly taught at the grad student level. But CRT has evolved into something like Frankenstein's monster that was pieced together from the dead. The latest example of CRT thinking is the claim that the denial of evolution is a form of white supremacy. The author of the Scientific American Opinion article, Allison Hopper, begins with the following assertion. The global scientific community overwhelmingly accepts that all living humans are of African descent. We are all descended genetically and also culturally from dark-skinned ancestors. Early humans from the African continent are the ones who first invented tools, the use of fire, language, and religion. These dark-skinned early people laid down the foundation for human culture. Embracing humanity's dark-skinned ancestors with love and respect is key to changing our relationship to the past and to creating racial equity in the present. These ancient people made the rest of us possible. Opening our hearts to them and embracing them as heroic, fully human, and worthy of our respect is part of the process of healing from our racist history. Pay attention to this line from her quotation. These ancient people made the rest of us possible. As I'll show below, Hopper is completely unaware of the innate racist history of the theory of evolution. Not only is the theory of evolution being questioned on scientific grounds, but it is also being critiqued for its social and moral implications. Political pressure is being exerted on school boards across the United States to teach CRT in grades K through 12 as a way to introduce destructive left-wing topics like the following. Provide an already created in-depth study that critiques empire, white supremacy, anti-blackness, anti-indigeneity, racism, patriarchy, cis-heteropatriarchy, capitalism, ableism, human-centrism, and other forms of power and oppression at the intersections of our society, and that we oppose attempts to ban critical race theory and or the 1619 Project. Now that is a mouthful, but this is what's happened with the academic approach to critical race theory and the use of CRT as a dumping ground for all types of left-wing causes. Does anyone want leftists who control our nation's government schools teaching anything using the CRT label? The 1619 Project writer Nicole Hannah-Jones said in a podcast that she believes Cuba is the most equal country in the Western Hemisphere and could serve as a model for its integration agenda. In a sense, Cuba is the most equal country in the Western Hemisphere because nearly everyone is equally poor because of the island's communist social and economic policies that began in the mid-1950s. From my evaluation of the 1619 Project, see the foreword I wrote to the 1776 Project that you can order at AmericanVision.org. Look up the following to see how radicalized CRT has become. Cis-heteropatriarchy. Anthropocentrism, that is, human-centrism. That is, we're just animals among all the other animals. And this is going to become important when we discuss what evolution really teaches. In the right hands, for example, critiquing empire can be a good thing. Christians have been doing this for a long time, but do you think the NEA wants a Christian critique of empires and how God has dealt with them? To do so would mean dealing with the biblical view of empire as God's government over us and over all other governments, self, family, church, and civil. They are all bound to follow his moral standards for these jurisdictionally limited governments. That's not going to happen. Why no discussion of what the Bible says about man-stealing, that is, slavery, found in Exodus chapter 21:16, 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 10, and how following this law would have stopped the slave trade in its tracks? Why no history about how the Christian William Wilberforce worked tirelessly to stop the slave trade based on a biblical analysis of the moral injustice of the humanity. The 1925 Scopes trial is often seen as the obscurantist William Jennings Bryan defending an archaic and irrelevant religion against the enlightened views of the jurist Clarence Darrow, who extolled the virtues of Darwinism. What few people realize, and CRT advocates don't want you to know, is that Bryan pointed out the moral dangers of evolutionary theory, a history that Alison Hopper seems to be unaware of. We must be careful how we apply this doctrine of the strongest. Bryan feared what came to be known in the next decade as social Darwinism, the idea that human society is an arena of struggle in which the strongest prevail, the fittest survive, and poor misfits must be neglected in the name of progress through betterment of the race. If dark-skinned people were the first to develop civilization, then dark-skinned people were the first to act out nature red in tooth and claw and survival of the fittest. There are no advances in evolution except by way of violence. Step on or be stepped on to advanced evolutionary dogma. Kill or be killed. Let's not forget what evolutionist Richard Dawkins has said. In the universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt and other people are going to get lucky. And you won't find any rhyme or reason for it, nor any justice. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at the bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, and no good. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. According to Hopper, this would first apply to our dark-skinned ancestors. We forget the subtitle to Charles Darwin's 1859 evolutionary blockbuster, The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Now, Darwin's supporters claimed that his use of races was meant to describe subspecies of animals. To a certain degree, that is true. But what did Darwin mean by subspecies? What if Darwin thought of non-whites as subspecies of animals that had not reached their full evolutionary potential? In his evolutionary sequel, The Descent of Man, Darwin wrote the following. At some future period, not very distant as measured by centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace the savage races throughout the world. At the same time, the anthropomorphous apes will no doubt be exterminated. The break between man and his nearest allies will then be wider, for it will intervene between man in a more civilized state, as we may hope, even than the Caucasian and some ape as low as a baboon instead of, as of now, between the Negro or Australian and the gorilla. In the 1925 Scopes monkey trial, the defendant, John Scopes, taught from an approved textbook called A Civic Biology, written by George Hunter. The book is not so much a scientific defense of Darwinism, but a rehearsal of Darwinism's social implications. In particular, Chapter 17 discusses the application to human society of the laws of selection and approves the eugenic policies and scientific racism common in the United States at that time. Now, Scopes, a substitute teacher planted by the ACLU to test Tennessee's anti-evolution law, was teaching his students from Chapter 17. In civic biology, Hunter believed that it would be criminal to hand down handicaps to the next generation and regarded families with a history of tuberculosis, epilepsy, and feeble-mindedness as parasitic on society. The remedy, according to Hunter, is to prevent breeding. His textbook taught high school students that Caucasians represented by the civilized white inhabitants of Europe and America were the highest type of all. In a section labeled Blood Tells, Hunter wrote, "Brilliant men and women have received the good inheritance from their ancestors." These were the views of the progressives of that time. The views espoused in the book about evolution, race, and eugenics, that eugenics means good genes, were common to American progressives, especially in the work of Charles Benedict Davenport, one of the most prominent American biologists of the early 20th century, whom Hunter cites in his book. Hunter's remedy To purge the unfit from society was to treat these undesirables like they were lower animals and probably kill them off to prevent them from spreading. Humanity will not allow this, he wrote, but we do have the remedy of separating the sexes in asylums or other places and in various ways preventing intermarriage and the possibilities of perpetuating such a low and degenerate race. Remedies of this sort have been tried successfully in Europe and are now meeting with some success in this country. Now, remember, this is written prior to 1925. 1925 was when the Scopes trial was going on. This was the view of that particular era, and it grew out of Darwin's view of evolution. Alison Hopper is a filmmaker who has been creating content for young people on the topic of evolution. She might want to include this observation from Barbara Reynolds, a former columnist for USA Today. I quote, "Prohibiting the teaching of creationism in favor of evolution creates an atheistic, belligerent tone that might explain why our kids sometimes perform like Godzilla instead of children made in the image of God. While evolution teaches that we are accidents or freaks of nature, creationism shows humankind as the offspring of a divine creator. There are rules to follow which govern not only our time on earth, but also the afterlife. If evolution is forced on our kids, we shouldn't be perplexed when they beat on their chests or worse yet, beat on each other and their teachers." Close quote. Reynolds' comments are reminiscent of what C.S. Lewis wrote. "We make men without chests, and we expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh and honor, and we are shocked to find traitors in our midst. We castrate and bid the geldings to be fruitful." And I have written, and to conclude this, "We strip men and women of the certainty that they were created in the image of God, and we are surprised when they act like the beasts of the field."
Thank you for listening to the Gary DeMar Blogcast. For more from Gary and American Vision, check out the American Vision Collection in the Canon app.